Welcome into this archived episode of the Original Essay Talk podcast. It's your favorite local podcast host and retirement advisor, Zach Espericueta. With the changes to the original podcast and rebrand in May of 2021, the current events and interview follow-up segments were taken out of these archived episodes for easier accessibility to the interview itself. Most new listeners just want to hear the interview anyway. Keep that in mind if you hear any references made to other segments or when you hear some of the old podcast music. I really hope you enjoy this interview. Be sure to give the podcast a rate and review on Apple Podcasts and a follow on social media at Essay Pod Network. Enjoy the episode. So welcome back, listeners. Today we have Eric Cooper, the CEO of the San Antonio Food Bank. He is a native Texan. He moved to San Antonio 20 years ago, worked at the food bank up in Dallas before taking over here in our beloved city. Without further ado, Eric, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing really well. Excited to be on the show today and join the listeners. So thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being on here and give our listeners a little backstory on how you got started with the food bank.
Yeah. So Amanda, it's a little bit of a crazy story. You know, I was an entrepreneur and trying to make my way in the world. My parents had gotten divorced. I started to see how some of those family struggles impact family. And my dad, in essence, became a deadbeat dad, didn't send child support home to my mom and my little brothers and sister. And I did what I could to help, but ultimately became estranged from him, frustrated that he left them in that predicament. But after a few years in my efforts to try to find him, I found him homeless on the streets of Portland. And it really changed me. I knew that struggle is something that we all go through, but seeing my dad in a situation of mental health and crisis and homelessness and being hungry made me think, you know, what was I doing to make sure that, you know, our neighbors, our brothers and sisters were getting that nourishment. And so I pivoted from for-profit to nonprofit and really dedicated my life to making sure that people get nourishment. And it's been just an amazing journey.
But you really have a personal story when it comes to, you know, the reason why you got into this business or this industry, this world, you would say, but you probably didn't expect something like COVID to come about.
Yeah, absolutely, Zach. I mean, getting started back in 1993, it was interesting. There were so many people that were unemployed, and it was really about trying to get them food for today and then strengthen them in tomorrow and their lifetime journey. But ultimately, it was about employment. The last few decades, to be honest, most people have been working. We typically are serving the working poor. It's a single mom. She's got a few kids and she's working, doing the best she can. But when a crisis arises, she comes to the food bank. Now with COVID, it almost feels like we've slipped back into such a significant amount of people now unemployed. What will the future be? I don't know. But the food bank fights that daily disaster of poverty. And when a natural disaster occurs, we're gonna step up to that too. And boy, COVID-19 has been a challenge like no other. And to see the demand as high as it is, you know, before COVID-19, we fed about 60,000 people a week. And that number went shortly back in April to about 120,000 people a week. And so doubling the demand on us has been a challenge to keep up with. But our city, as amazing as it is, has continued to support us and make sure that we're able to do our mission. And for that, I'm grateful.
And, you know, we've seen a lot of San Antonians step up. We've interviewed a lot of San Antonians that stepped up during COVID-19. Now, the San Antonio Food Bank has a mission. I saw on your website, it says food for today, food for tomorrow, and food for a lifetime. So do you want to kind of elaborate on that? Because it's not just giving people food for dinner.
No, that's right, Amanda. I mean, we have this comprehensive approach that sometimes it's a little food bank jargony. We think of it in two sides, the give help and the get help. And we also think of our work in the feed the line and the shorten the line. And so, as you said, framing our work into those three buckets of food for today, food for tomorrow, and food for a lifetime for us means we want to make sure we take care of people immediately. And if they're in crisis, if their refrigerator's empty, cupboards are bare, we're going to take care of that need immediately. And so families either walk in or they call us or they connect online and they'll be referred to one of our food pantries. We have over 500 distribution points throughout South Texas. We also then have our pop-up distributions, which have been shown on television. And I think what most people now are seeing is these drive-through distributions, but that helps us get families food immediately. But after we're connecting them to physical food, we want to make sure they understand the public benefits that are out there, those resources that can stabilize their household for tomorrow, the incredible programs operated by the United States Department of Agriculture, like the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, which was formerly called food stamps. That's actually the largest food benefit that families can receive. And we want to make sure that they understand the eligibility requirements and help them apply for that benefit. For many of our families that have small children, maybe women, infants, and children, WIC, if they lack health insurance, Medicaid, or the Children's Health Insurance Program, for seniors, long-term care. So there's a lot of these great federal programs that oftentimes go unutilized because people don't know about them or they don't know how to qualify. And so the food bank works to help families stabilize their household for tomorrow through enrolling families in those programs. And in doing that, we can see who's working and who's not working. And ultimately, if we're going to shorten the line, it's about meaningful employment. It's about a living wage. And so we're able to partner with the Workforce Solutions Alamo and organizations like Project Quest, where we can connect people to either training that can get them a job or connect them directly to employment opportunities. But ultimately, that's the goal, to move people to self-sufficiency and self-reliance. Once you have income, you're able to choose, you know, what foods you eat, how well you eat. And so we do a lot in the space of nutrition education and healthy recipes, healthy cooking. Truly, food is medicine, right? It's what our bodies need. And for us to be able to provide that comprehensive approach allows us to impact more than just hunger, but those chronic diseases like diabetes and heart disease and hypertension. All of those are nutrition related. And we want to make sure San Antonians have that great quality food and have access to it so they can grow healthy and strong.
We've seen the food distributions. That's something that we have seen on the news since COVID started. But were food distributions already happening on that large of a scale already, or was it more small scale?
Great question. So those pop-up distributions that you're seeing, we've always done. And it's usually been in the space of distributing some of our fresh products, some of our produce. Oftentimes when it's donated to the food bank, the reason why it's donated is because it's ripe, right? It's ready to be eaten. And we've got to logistically get it in the hands of families that need it immediately before it goes bad. And so throughout South Texas, we've had those pop-ups and they usually would feed a few hundred families. But early into the crisis, back in March, April, those pop-up distributions that would serve a couple of hundred all of a sudden started to serve a couple of thousand. And we just never saw that kind of demand. And it really made us move from some of our neighborhood distribution sites into larger scale parking lots where we could handle the traffic and be able to coordinate safely the distribution of food. You know, we do between 15 and 20 of those pop-up distributions each week. It is humbling to see the length of the lines. It was back in April on the 9th. It was actually Good Friday. You know, when you think about our city, it's a humble, hardworking, amazing city that we love, right? But we've got this Riverwalk economy that just took it on the chin. I mean, the hospitality industry, many of those furloughed workers saw their last paycheck in March, and then by that Good Friday in April, were desperate. We had a distribution that we knew we were going to get a lot of families at. Literally 10,000 families came to Trader's Village. And there's an Express News photographer, William Luther, who captured the images of those lines via a drone. And those photographs went throughout the world. They were seen in London and New Zealand and Canada and Mexico, New York to California. I mean, it was humbling, but I think it captured what was happening at food banks across the world and, you know, resonated, I think, here in San Antonio with that distribution. We knew there was a need, but seeing it that day and from that day forward, that level of demand is pretty sobering.
And so you keep talking about the great need right now, especially during this pandemic. what can, you know, citizens that have been lucky to be employed, you know, Zach and I, we've been able to keep our jobs and keep working, you know, what can we do? Can we volunteer? Can you donate? What are your biggest needs right now as far as the San Antonio Food Bank?
Well, Amanda, thank you again. I say we tend to drive at two sides of our work, the give help and the get help. And we talked about the get help side. And again, if any listeners in need, please go to our website, safoodbank.org, and you can register there to get food and get assistance. You could call our helpline at 210-431-8326. Again, 210-431-8326. But if you have the ability to give help, we always need four things, and that's food, time, money, and voice. You know, food through food drives or food collections, it's always easy to get maybe your company or club or neighborhood association, maybe your church, to collect non-perishable food items. That goes a long way. You know, we need volunteers. So the gift of time, you know, for many big corporations, it's been their corporate policy not to gather. And so unfortunately, they've had to, you know, not come and volunteer as a company, but we have seen their individual, you know, employees say, hey, I can't come as a corporate volunteer, but maybe as an individual volunteer, I'll come and bring my kids and serve. But there's lots to do at the food bank, working in our warehouse, our kitchens, on our farm, or helping us with these distributions. If you have some time, please come and volunteer. We have all the safe protocols in place for COVID-19. You know, you need to make sure, number one, that you are healthy. But when you show up, you need to be masked. We do temperature checks and all of that kind of stuff to make sure we keep folks safe while they're serving. Dollars, as I mentioned, you know, the food bank's known for our efficiencies. I think as I got into nonprofit work, I wanted to be the most efficient nonprofit in the world. And I mean that in all sincerity. I knew from my for-profit experience trying to raise venture capital, it was all about ROI. It was about return on the investment, trying to be efficient. And so nonprofits are generally graded by administrative overhead. So how much of a dollar actually gets to those in need. And for your San Antonio Food Bank, we're proud to say that 98 cents out of every dollar goes directly to those in need, just 2% administrative overhead. So there just isn't a more efficient nonprofit. And our ROI tends to be for every dollar we take in, we can put out 7 meals. And so leveraging a dollar is what we want to do when people do donate to us. The last thing that I would say is voice, and you guys are giving us this gift right now, you know, the gift of voice, telling our story, advocating for us. There's a lot of work around those federal programs that I mentioned earlier, where public policy and supporting those in need is something that elected officials need to hear about. People can always offer a word of prayer in behalf of those that are struggling, or just using your social media, getting involved and share this podcast, you know, encourage your network to donate food or time or money or voice in the fight against hunger and supporting our neighbors in need. So lots of different ways for folks to get involved. The best place to start is our website, safoodbank.org. As you saw, Amanda, there's lots of different things going on and folks can pick and choose what they'd like to do.
Well, and I just want to add, Eric, before this, just personally, I've done some volunteer opportunities through the food bank. I used to work at Frost Bank up until about a year and a half ago, and we used to do volunteer opportunities in the warehouse, doing the warehouse sorting. And that was always fun to me. And it was fun, one, because of course you're with your colleagues and friends, but also, you know, they play music overhead. It's just fun. You're kind of working together, you know, and I want that to resonate with our listeners and have them understand that. On top of that, my girlfriend is actually a big fan of working on the urban farm. We always joke that I think it was a goat that they had there. Yep. They give them names. And so every time we pass by the food bank, she talks about the goat that, you know, her name was Christy. And it was just funny to me, you know, but it goes to show that it's also a fun experience going there and volunteering. Obviously, it's important to do that. It's going to people that have that need, that demand, but it's fun as well. And I want our listeners to understand that.
Hey, Zach, you nailed it. I think no matter what you do, whether working in the farm or the garden or the kitchens or the warehouse or out at the distributions, it's work. I always think of it as it's a form of CrossFit. So you don't have to go to the gym, right? You get the physical workout. But what I've learned over the 27, 28 years that I've been doing this is that people need to serve, that each one of us as human beings innately feel better about ourselves and are actually healthier when we're selfless, when we're giving, when we're sharing. And it's an incredible opportunity, I think, to be able to be useful and to make a difference in somebody else's life. It brings us joy. It truly is better to give than receive. And I think that's what people experience when they come to the food bank. But in addition to that, like your girlfriend, there's some things sometimes that people learn, right? If you haven't, you know, had the experience of working on a farm, you can learn about agriculture, you can learn about livestock, you can learn about all of those things that help strengthen our food system. Many of our volunteers get inspired to then get a little garden going in their own backyard. And then sometimes we become the beneficiaries of their surplus tomatoes or whatever they're growing in their backyard. So it really is an incredible self-fulfilling engagement that, you know, yields more than just this volunteer experience, but it yields knowledge. And ultimately, that's what it's about. I'll always say that I don't think we're going to solve hunger with a canned good. We're going to solve it by building a city of compassion where people think about others, where they do well by them, where they're making sure that neighbors' basic needs are met. And if we can have a city of compassion that looks out after everyone, that ultimately solves hunger, that ends poverty, that decreases the demand at the food bank. And, you know, I'm just so proud of our city and how they've weathered through COVID in stepping up for their neighbors. And I want everyone that's volunteered or supported us to know how personally grateful I am to their generosity, because I meet the families that get the food and they didn't know where else to turn. Now they have food on their table because people gave.
You know, Zach was mentioning the farm. You were mentioning the farm. I think a lot of people don't know when they think of San Antonio Food Bank, they just think of canned goods and handing out canned goods. I think a lot of people don't know what all you have to offer. So if someone wanted to volunteer, but say, you know, they couldn't do the physical labor or something like that, what are the different departments where people can go and volunteer their time?
Yeah, Amanda. So you nailed it. And that's, again, such a gift that you guys are highlighting us on the show today, is because I think the food bank is in a lot of ways the best kept secret. They know maybe our brand and assume what we do, but it's until they come and visit or visit the website that they learn about the complexity of our approach and all the different things that we're doing to make sure that people get nourished. Volunteers work in lots of different capacities. We always need individual volunteers working throughout our administration, so helping to answer phones or clerical work and all kinds of opportunities for individual volunteers that have the time to commit. If you'd like to come as a part of a group, that's, you know, what we see the most, as Zach mentioned, whether it's a family or, you know, small business or company, church, school, lots of different ways to kind of have a social experience. So come out with your friends, do some good, maybe a team building activity. And those activities, you know, could be pretty light lifting, like making sandwiches. We feed a lot of kids, takes a lot of sandwiches to do that. We prepare a lot of scratch meals in our kitchens. About 40% of what we distribute is fresh produce. I think sometimes people are surprised because they hear our message when we're asking for non-perishable items to be donated at a food drive. They assume that all we handle is non-perishable, but more than half of what we distribute is perishable. Again, 40% of that's perishable is actual fresh produce. And so anything that you could get like at an HEB Plus is generally what's flowing through the food bank, from refrigerated to frozen, non-perishable to non-foods. You know, during COVID, we actually took in several semi-truckloads of toilet paper, and that was like gold, remember? I mean, you just couldn't buy it, and we were able to give it to families. But diapers, detergents, toothbrushes, toothpaste, all of those health hygiene items, you know, PPE has been a big part of what we've been getting families. A little trivia, in our efforts to serve the entire family, we actually are the largest distributor of pet food. So we provided food to about 80,000 pets last year. But we want to make sure that the entire household gets fed. And that includes, you know, the four-legged family members. For a lot of our seniors, it might be their only companion. And so being able to provide food to that struggling senior in their retirement years and make sure that their pet is able to stay with them as a companion is a big part of what we do.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. And I think you were kind of reading my mind there, Eric. I was actually going to mention the pet food. A couple episodes ago, Amanda and I were talking about that because in my experience, so I took part in one of the food distribution events at the Alamo Dome. It was back in November. And I worked with a gentleman who apparently had done it a number of times there. You know, we were in the front of that particular row. And we were handing out pet food, dog food, cat food, bird food. And I was telling Amanda on the podcast episode later on, it was a surprise to me. Like, I didn't think about how many people needed those items. I was just thinking about food, of course, like you were mentioning. But, you know, people don't realize that people have pets too. And you can't just, you know, kick that animal to the curb. That's part of your family. And so it's important that that's offered as well.
You know, over the years, there's been so many experiences of connecting with families that were desperate, right? And, you know, when you have lost your job and you're struggling to make your rent and your utilities, sometimes a pet might be seen as a luxury. We definitely know that when we can provide families pet food, they're less likely to surrender those pets. And so I tend to think of it as kind of upstream work, you know, when you think of animal shelters and the humane societies, the animal care services, generally those are the last resort for these animals. And if we can keep them housed, if we can keep them with their families and provide their families some food so that that reduces their financial burden as they're weathering the struggle and having to prioritize, you know, what bills do I pay? What can I afford? And just the companionship, right? I mean, pets, you know, they bring a lot of mental health, and definitely in COVID, we can all use a healthy dose of good energy, and pets are a good source of that. It helps us get physical, you know, get out and take the dog for a walk, you know. I mean, generally homes with pets are more active. So it really fits into that overarching plan. And I'm so glad to hear that you're out at one of those distributions. And if you're like me, it's always kind of humbling to see those families and, you know, how grateful they are and how appreciative they are for really anything. But just to be able to get a little bit of support during this time, it goes a long way. We're just so grateful to everybody that helps us make that happen.
You talked earlier about compassion, having compassion, the city as a whole having compassion for your neighbor. You know, I'm wondering, with the increase in demand because of the virus, has there also been an increase in the supply? Has it caused people, more people, I guess, to donate and think twice about just throwing out food?
Yeah, that's such a great question. You know, it's been a mixed experience at the early onset of COVID-19 because of restaurant closures, kind of food service companies, hotels, caterers. Generally speaking, that was a big supply of food for us. And with their closures, we started to see less food coming into the food bank. And, you know, we also rescue a lot of food from grocery retailers. HEB is a big partner, but Walmart, Costco's, Trader Joe's, you know, all of those great grocery retailers donate. And if you remember back at the onset of COVID, many of those grocery retailers were struggling to keep up with the demand that shifted on them from restaurant closures. Now more people were buying groceries. And so they were selling out, which actually meant that there was less leftovers for us to pick up. And it was right in that space where our food supply was shrinking and our demand was going from 60,000 to 120,000. To be honest, I was panicked. I mean, I just was so worried we were going to run out of food. We were shipping more than we were taking in. And, you know, when you think about the food bank, we're a lot like your checking account, right? It takes deposits to be able to balance the withdrawals. And, you know, our inventory got so low that you could see through the racks at the warehouse to the back walls that we just didn't have the food that we needed. And that's when everyone stepped up, and whether they were doing food drives or food companies started to donate or people gave financially, it allowed us then to start buying a tremendous amount of food. The challenge for us is cities given big, and they've been continuing to give big, and that's allowed us to be able to meet this demand. But we go through about a semi-truckload of food every hour. You know, a semi-truckload of food might cost about $40,000. And we need 8 of those a day, and it's gone in a day. And so as the cities continue to step up, we've been able to provide the cadence and duration is what I'm concerned about. I know ultimately, you know, we want to get these families out of these parking lots and into grocery stores. And that happens when, you know, they can purchase their own food, and whether that's through a federal program or through their own earned income. Ultimately, it's about the economy coming back, being strengthened, and giving people that lift that will ultimately start to reduce the number of cars in those parking lots, the number of people in those lines. But until then, we just hope that we're able to bridge that gap and San Antonio continues to step up in a big way so that we can continue to meet the need.
You know, putting numbers to that need is honestly mind-blowing. I knew there was a need, and I know especially during COVID-19, there was a huge need, but just knowing how much, you know, a semi-truckload every hour is incredible. Zach and I, we've been asking you questions based off what we know about San Antonio Food Bank, but obviously based on that, there's a lot we don't know. So if you wanted to tell our audience some things at San Antonio Food Bank that they don't know that they really need to, what would those be?
When you think of hunger, it's really a symptom of a bigger issue, and that's poverty. People in poverty generally have lots of issues going on. They're unemployed or underemployed, or, you know, they're behind in their rent or utilities. They might have experienced a divorce, or they're going through a health crisis. But I always think someone that's hungry, they just have one problem. And until they solve that one problem, they can't start to address the complexity of poverty. I think many of us have heard the parable, you know, you can give a man a fish or you can teach him how to fish. At the food bank, I tend to think that if you don't pack a tuna fish sandwich, she won't meet you at the dock. And what I mean by that is it's not an or question. It's an and. You have to provide the fish while you're teaching the fish. Providing that tuna fish sandwich when she meets you at the dock, that tells her that her babies are going to have food, that those basic needs are going to be taken care of while you're working to better your life, while you're working to strengthen your abilities, to increase your income, to achieve some form of stability and self-reliance. I've oftentimes struggled with the reality that the food bank provides food to a lot of people that were already working, were doing all that they could do, yet they're just not making enough. And I would challenge all employers to do what they can for their employees, to think about a living wage, to think about providing healthcare, providing personal time off, sick leave. I think COVID-19's taught us that we need employees that have symptoms to stay home. But for so many of the families we provide food to, if they were to stay home, they're losing their wage. They're losing their income for that day. And so they've always gone to work sick. I think we can change the way we work. I think we've learned in COVID that we need to be providing a stronger safety net for residents. And that comes through some of those basic things. The importance of education. And for so many kids right now, maybe doing distant learning and missing their meals that the schools provide has created some demand on us that we're trying to meet. But ultimately, as we can strengthen the schools and the classrooms and the teachers and the cafeteria, kids will learn how to fish while they're getting a fish. And those are some of the strategies that ultimately, I think, end poverty and therefore end hunger. But you have to eat in the meantime. And the food bank's all about just trying to bridge those gaps. And right now, it's bridging the gap in the economy until COVID subsides and our economy is recovering. But ultimately, it's going a little deeper and thinking about the struggles that we had even before COVID and being more equitable, being more inclusive, and thinking about how diversity and the lack of diversity impacts our city. There's a reality that suggests your zip code determines how long you're going to live. You know, that is just wrong. It shouldn't matter what side of town you're born into. Every resident of our city deserves opportunity. And I look forward to the day where there's more equity and opportunity. Everyone in our city thrives.
I can't agree with you more, Eric, on exactly what you just explained. Now, you've worked at least one other food bank before, and I know you said it was up in Dallas. You said it was about 20 years ago, which I know is a while now. But what would you say makes San Antonio different?
Well, I tell you, it's funny. Growing up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, I never was a Mavericks fan. So I'm just going to put it out there. It has been my pleasure to be the biggest Spurs fan there is. And it really comes because of being able to work alongside Greg Popovich and seeing his generosity and love of our city and what a quality organization they are. And over the years, many of the players getting involved and just seeing how a professional team can be on and off the court. Our city's real. It's a city that is incredibly hospitable. And I think the military brings some of that to our great city, just this melting pot of people coming and going. And, you know, our city helps to make people that aren't from here welcome. You know, the history of the missions and the importance of family and faith and our Latin culture, our amazing heritage of food and hospitality. It's what I love about our city. I mean, I'm a huge lover of the breakfast taco, and there's just so much of our city that I believe in, that I love, and it's why it's my home. I actually work for two other food banks. Got my start in Utah, working in Salt Lake City for the Utah Food Bank. And then it was just as I was, you know, finishing up some college, and then got back to Texas and worked for the North Texas Food Bank in South Oak Cliff, and then came here to San Antonio. And I think all communities are great, but San Antonio is the best.
Well, before Amanda gets to our legacy question, I will say, to add to that point, San Antonio does have the best breakfast tacos in the country.
I was literally about to jump on here and say you and Zach can talk about the love for breakfast tacos probably for a long time, because Zach definitely shares that feeling. And so, you know, I want to get to my favorite question of the podcast, and it's going to be a twofold one, because I want to ask your personal legacy that you want to leave here in San Antonio, but also the food bank's legacy that they're trying to leave here in San Antonio.
Wow. You know, it's tough for me to leave the topic of tacos, you know, just because food is love, right? Food is medicine. Food is this amazing convening power that brings people to the same table. And when I think about those families that struggle with the ingredients that bring them and their loved ones to the table, it motivates me to want to do more because of the power of food. For many of us, maybe a meal was how we met our girlfriend or boyfriend or our spouse. You know, it's those experiences of just being able to sit down and enjoy someone's company, but then enjoy the nourishment of food. You know, when I think of the legacy of the food bank, I think of it as strengthening the dinner table, strengthening the kitchen table, and therefore enriching the lives of the families that are in their season of struggle. It's my belief that all of us struggle for something. You need to know that you're not alone, and that oftentimes it's not a choice. It's not a decision. It's just life. I think that seasons pass, and someone that might be struggling today because of COVID-19 will get through it and get on the other side of it. Our motto is to fight hunger and to feed hope. And it really is meet that immediate need today. But tomorrow, there are brighter days ahead, and people shouldn't be discouraged. I think for myself, you know, I'd hope that I help our city with understanding. I think, as I mentioned earlier, I see a city that's compassionate and a city that has a high level of compassion, you know, ultimately looks after those that struggle. When we're less judgmental, when we're, you know, not being critical, but thinking with love, I mean, ultimately, I think that's the answer. Many of songs have suggested love is the answer, right? It sounds so cheesy, but it is so true that if we just treat our neighbors like family, if we love them, then we'll serve them, then we'll help them, then we'll be willing to sometimes look past some of the obstacles. It's easy to judge. It's harder to love. But in that, I think there's hope for us all.
I'm really glad you brought that up. You know, Zach and I in the last few months have had some really tough conversations regarding that and just, you know, understanding differences and knowing that it's okay to be different and you still respect each other. And I think that's something that our society has kind of lost. And San Antonio has kind of held true to that in a lot of aspects. So I'm glad you brought that up because it's something that people just need to keep hearing no matter where you're from, just love and respect each other. So I really want to say thank you, Eric, for bringing that up.
Well, I definitely, again, believe in the convening power of food, right? And that in food, there's culture, there's ethnicity, there's diversity. You know, I think, man, you ought to think about giving up Mexican food before you think about building a wall, right? There's so much of coming together that is empowering and strengthening. And, you know, hunger is a pretty amazing bipartisan topic. You know, both sides don't believe that hunger should exist. Our diversity of faiths, whether Christian, Jew, Gentile, you know, Sikh, Muslim, all faiths believe there should not be hunger. And when we can respect that diversity of tradition and background and thought and still come together to the same table, I think that's where the answers can be strategized. And I think that's where problems can be solved. And we tend to focus so much on what makes us different. But what I tend to see is more of how similar everybody is, and that we should talk about those similarities and build on those common grounds. And I think if we do more of that in the future, I think some of our struggles with racial injustice and turmoil and friction starts to go away. I do think our city has done a lot of things right. As I look at the national landscape and where a lot of cities have struggled, I couldn't be any more proud of the maturity and the level of dignity that I think our city works in and our residents hold true. But the reality is that we've got a long way to go. We need to be having the courage to have those conversations, but it's with respect and it's with love. I know we'll get through it as a community together. So I look forward to those days.
I usually wrap up the interview by asking what advice would you give? And I typically cater it to whatever industry the guest works in. But Eric, you've given us advice throughout this whole interview, which we thoroughly have enjoyed. We appreciate you joining us on the podcast. And real quick, before we let you go, I do want to give you, or we want to give you a chance to kind of shout out the food bank. Where can we find you? Give us your website, maybe your socials. Where can our listeners go to find out more about the food bank?
Well, Zach, I mean, definitely I'll plug. Any nonprofit is in need at this moment. So if you have the ability to volunteer, give, donate, there are so many great nonprofits across our city doing some amazing work. So please support them as a sector and industry. If you think of this podcast and something sparks some interest, go to our website. It's safoodbank.org. If you're in Comal or Guadalupe counties, we do have a facility, the New Braunfels Food Bank at nbfoodbank.org. Just act. I mean, oftentimes we hear something, we feel a prompting, and we don't do anything. I would just encourage your listeners to act on those promptings. Again, what I've experienced is that heroes are welcome. Capes are optional at the food bank. You know, Zach, you talked about heeding the call, showing up at the distribution at the Alamo Dome, and you blessed a lot of lives. There's no doubt that there was probably 2,000 families that wouldn't have gotten help had you not shown up. And I think that's our city, that's our listeners' opportunity, is choosing to show up, choosing to take that invitation. And so please, whatever you're feeling, take that invitation to make a difference. You'll get a whole lot more out of it than what you bring, but both lives will be blessed because you chose to take action.
And Eric, thank you so much for this interview today. Like Zach said, I mean, you've offered so much information and advice throughout the whole thing. And we just could not be more appreciative that you took the time today to interview on our podcast and just share with our listeners what you can do to help our great city.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on. And I look forward to the future.
So listeners, that is going to do it for our interview and this segment of the Essay Talk podcast. We're going to take another quick break, and then Amanda and I will come back in our third and last segment to talk about today's guest. So stay tuned.
From coast to coast, from the Great Lakes to the Gulf, at Spectrum Reach, we make local businesses big and big brands look local. With the best content, insights, products, and people, be on every screen with that one idea you need to turn a consumer into your customer. We're the most trusted media partner in America, and we're also your neighbors. Welcome to Spectrum Reach. Let us show you around the neighborhood. Grow your business. Go to spectrumreach.com to get started.
Thank you for listening to this archived episode of the original Essay Talk podcast. I really hope you enjoyed the interview. If you enjoyed this episode and are looking for more content, you'll want to hit that subscribe or follow button, depending on which podcast platform you are using. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, I do also ask that you please give us a rate and review. That really helps the podcast grow. Lastly, if you want to keep up with the podcast, check us out on social media at SA Pod Network. Take care and viva San Antonio.